please.
I'm actually working in Spain, France, and the Netherlands. Sorry, I'm working in Spain, France, and the Netherlands now with different engineers, and it's an interesting comparison that I'm making, because the Spanish engineers are certainly the best and the cheapest, so I use them the most. The Dutch ones are the most hip to ecological systems and socio-ecological systems, and the French ones are certainly the most politically and most expensive, you know, ones. But what I'm interested in working in these different contexts is actually, again, the informal economies of making stuff and where that happens, where the engineers are actually donating their time because of the pleasure. So this is in the hacker spaces and the maker spaces. Obama actually, I think it was June 26th, declared it National Maker Day. So this is actually what we could term critical making as opposed to critical thinking, which is the integration, of course, of the sort of not the make a fair, but the make it better fair, right? The informal mentorship that professional engineers are doing through hackerspaces and co-working spaces, and the incredible, maybe hyperbolic expectation that is an area of innovation because, presumably, of the amputation from universities of the support of machine shops and, you know, messy maker spaces that that students work in 24 hours and drink coffee, you know, and make stuff. So I know that Spain has, for instance, invested specifically, Barcelona in particular, has invested specifically in a network of fab labs as community spaces. In France, the Laboratoire, I think it's called, is coming from a Harvard investment. And in the Netherlands, it's the arts that are investing in these kind of makerspaces where critical making is happening, the integration of critical thinking and the extraordinary social responsiveness to addressing the challenges that we face in redesigning urban systems, redesigning our relationship to natural systems. So I wonder, from the three different perspectives, where and how you're recognizing the informal sectors of innovation and their incorporation. You know, are they displaying the lack of what formal engineering education is providing, or are they showing us a model of how to integrate liberal arts and engineering?
I will say something. I don't know if I understood correctly, but when you are saying that Spanish students are cheap, they are not cheap at all. Because if you consider that the cost for the society is enormous, because think that a lot of people enter to the engineering school, then they are fired. And then they resist for, let's say, 8 years to become an engineer. So that's expensive. They don't pay it, but the society pays for them. So one of those engineers costs a lot. They are good. Well, I'm sure they are not as good as in the top faculties, but I think they are quite good. When I send them out and so on, mostly they get good grades and so on. I don't think they are bad, but they are very, very expensive in this term because they were very selected. And also, I don't get you. Probably my presentation here was a little bit pessimistic because I like to point to arise some discussion about it, but it's not everything that's wrong. Of course, we have some spaces for critical thinking, and we have in even different committees and different initiatives that do something similar that has been explained here today. But I just wanted to stick like the more formal aspect of the profession. To me, the point today was it is possible to do something with a professional perspective and that is good for everyone, for society, students, engineers, or we have to choose in just developing ourselves or going to a professional approach. That was more or less what I tried to say here. I don't know if I answered your question.
Yes. I wouldn't. Maybe this also ties in what somebody else already said about the ultimate purpose of the university in the United States. I think we are making this distinction between the personal development and, let's say, the public good and working for the public good. Yeah, but it's not always this opposition between the two, because the traditional idea is that this liberal education, the education of the free man, is the man who puts his service in the service of the public good. Yeah, that is by definition. It was being about a good liberal in the sense of being a good civil. Civil person, yeah. So that, and about the remark about the informal, creativity niches. I don't know how that works in analysis precisely. What I would be interested in, I'm not sure whether this is a form of critical making. For that, I would like to know more about what are the value systems driving these people. What is it that they are after? And I don't know enough about that.
I don't know if my answer will be really the answer to the question, but it's what I want to say now. When I read Larry's proposal, my first reaction was that because of what I said about the French system, there was no way someone coming out of such a bachelor degree would find an opportunity to carry on engineering education in France because of this very strict system. But then I started really to look more precisely on innovation, pedagogical innovation in engineering education. As I said before, it's not three universities for one country. It's 250 small institutions. And I realized that there were lots of initiatives which are possible because those institutions are very flexible and small and independent, while the French universities has a very, very strong inertia. Yeah, it's moving very slowly. And I realized that there was a liberal art program in the Technological University of Compiègne, which is quite similar to the program developed, the idea of Larry. And I saw in one engineering school in Grenoble that there was a proposal for the student to do their two last years connected with political science master, and instead of 5 years, it takes 6 years to graduate, but they are political science. They will have a master in political science and the engineering degree, which is really something I had never heard about. So because of this opportunity to come here, I realized that there were places like this where new things were proposed. And in the world of the 5 years Catholic schools, I was talking before about this idea of the social engineer, I realized that there were some co-design laboratory, some places where creativity was developed in relation with many kind of stakeholders, and so there were really some initiatives like this about creativity in the schools. And another experience I saw was about the student who can in France in high school or in higher education have music or art or sport. I would say it's not education, but they are very good at sport or music or art, and they can carry on a special program and have a lot of time for this activity. And I didn't know that this was possible in engineering education. And I realized that there were two of those 250 institutions where students were really spending half of their time doing art or dance or music, and do this education. So thank you, Larry, for inviting me look at initiative here and there, because what I presented seemed to be very sad and very strict and very traditional and just selecting people to become just leaders and this theory of reproduction that you know from Bourdieu that would be really still so strong and so strict in the French context. So there are creativity and initiative in some places, which could be really places for students after a bachelor in liberal arts in engineering.
Hi, I'm Brian Penprase. I'm working this year at this new college in Singapore, Yale and US College. And I just wanted to ask, in the context sort of global liberal arts, how the surge of interest in liberal arts that's taking place in Asia, this is happening in China, Korea, Japan, Singapore, and even India. We're having a conference in March on liberal arts in India where there's a great deal of enthusiasm about a model of education that takes students out of rigid specializations and very early selection of majors and allowing them to have four-year programs. And this is happening, I think, across Asia at the same time while Diamond and others are attacking liberal arts models in the U.S. So there's a sort of paradoxical kind of devaluing of liberal arts in the U.S. while simultaneously many Asian countries are rapidly trying to develop the model. And I guess Europe is somewhat in the middle of this where there's a kind of a mixed feeling about liberal arts. And I'm just wondering whether or not the appreciation for liberal arts, which seems to be happening in Asia, where the connection between flexibly, holistically educated students and entrepreneurship is taking root, and whether in Europe that same perception of the need for kind of diverse fields as a sort of more general education that can spur creativity and entrepreneurship, whether that's taking root, whether there's possibility of sort of a more general expansion of liberal arts in Europe, or whether the more specialized programs are really going to continue onwards indefinitely.
I find it difficult to give an answer for the Netherlands. What it makes me think of is that in the 60s and 70s, there was a lot of activities going on in what it was called critical science and critical engineering, and which was a response to, let's say, the environmental issues that were coming up very clearly. So there was an idea about maybe that's close to liberal engineering or liberal science, liberal arts, in the sense of critically evaluating what's going on. That urgency is still there, but not reacted to in the same way as it was in the 60s and the 70s, I think. Yeah. But this is speculative.
It's not really an answer because I didn't. I don't know exactly how to answer. But something that came to my mind is that this question of critical thinking that was you were talking about in the 60s, 70s, that was very important in the Netherlands. What I've noticed is that in France, it's this five last years, it's coming from the students themselves through Ingénieurs Sans Frontières, Engineers Without Borders, which is a little bit different in France than what it is in the US, because in France it's only a student organization. But it's now the second time they got quite a lot of money for a research project, which goal is to, what they say, it's transforming engineering education. And when they say transforming engineering education, it's transforming to make, the word they use is train a citizen, an engineer, ingénieur citoyen, an engineer who is a citizen. Well, I don't know if it's citizen would be the good word in English for, yeah. And I was really impressed to see the energy that the student could really bring. And the very first project were maybe 6-7 years ago. And I remember a group of students who really went to see the deans and say, we want to have a sociologist and philosopher coming. And they came with a world program that called me. It was not at all in my region, and I don't know how they heard about me at that time because it's what I do is not always very visible. And then they wanted the conference from me and from other people, from trade unions and from NGOs. And this was just one experience a few years ago. And now they are having finance for a second project with they found themselves a PhD student to really be part of the program. So it's interesting to see when it comes from the students themselves, they say, please change. We want something else.
We've been talking a lot about whether students go to school to become educated or make a living, or, you know, to get more money. They could have both, by the way. But we live in what is now called a neoliberal world. In other words, market. Liberal there is not about what we've been using liberal. Liberal is, individualism and all that. And as you all know, your professors of engineering, business, and law typically make anywhere from 25% to 100% more than the professors in humanities, social sciences, and so forth. Economists also push themselves up. That wasn't always true, by the way. Say 50 or 60 years ago, those kinds of differentials were not even part of the game. Although you could, for example, in the sciences, get summer salary or something. And our students have an interestingly different issue, that they're not so sure they can get jobs. All right? It's one thing to talk to an MIT undergraduate and try to encourage them not to choose their job based on a $1,000 difference in salary. You might choose some other reason for your first job. But nowadays, from what I gather, the ability to find a suitable job, for some people, for the topmost, there's no problem, is more contingent or more problematic. So we're in a different world than we were 50 years ago. I think it's an enormous change. What I see is in the salary business. Professors of engineering make much more money in general than professors of literature, no matter what their eminence. And when we hire a new professor of, say, finance in the business school, they make more than most full professors in the humanities. This isn't, no publications, all promise, from someone who's quite distinguished. So it's a really curious world now, right? And everybody knows this. And so the role of the humanities and social sciences, except for the economists who've been able to, affect their, treat themselves as valuable, what I'm talking about. It's a very interesting phenomenon within the institution. And even if my university is a private university, so they do not tell you the salaries. It's secret and all that. Unlike, say, the state universities where the schedules are published and the salaries, or Michigan where they publish all the salaries in the school newspaper. Everybody knows. And so the engineering professors who want to deal with humanities have a curious situation. They're asking people who probably make half their salary if they're really strong to play with them without any special incentive. You got a real interesting problem. In other words, given market forces, given how universities have shifted the definition of what a professor is about, and given the contingencies of the economy, at least as perceived by many students, these economic forces, or market forces, in some sense destroy solidarity and some of the values you would most value.
Short reaction. In the Netherlands, I don't recognize this at all. In the Netherlands, the salaries of all the full professors are the same.
In France, it's the same too.
But if you have a first-grade economist in the Netherlands, a really distinguished one, he'll be bid away or she'll be bid away.
Things are changing slowly, but they are slowly. They are changing. You're right. But in principle, as a philosopher, I'm paid the same salary as a professor in mechanical engineering or whatever.
But you're 60 years old, but behind the times.
No, but this is still, at this moment, the case, and everything is published like that. But the interesting thing is, so we have here two different systems, and how does it affect the thing that we want to set up here? I don't see, what is it that you want to say about this issue, about setting up liberal studies in engineering? Is it a disadvantage or is it an advantage?
The market-based salaries?
Yeah.
Well, you're asking people to cooperate. Yet one of them knows, and they're both so equally powerful, so to speak, one of them knows that the other guy makes double my salary. And I'm just as distinguished in my field. I suspect you will not find the kind of cooperation that you might expect in a more solidarious environment.
Well, it depends on what the game is about and what people have to lose. I mean, that's
based on the salaries of the engineers. You have no problem because they'll get rich.
Susan,
that last comment raises the fundamental issues which I think are in this conversation. A liberal arts education, though Dean Lewis made fun of it, as his colleagues at Harvard, is not about making a living. It's about living. Most people who become a liberal arts scholar are not really interested too much in becoming rich. They have just as much brain power as the people who are getting rich. They made a choice. There's an assumption in a lot of this that there's a hierarchy of capacity or that there's a shared set of values, which is what our friend from the Netherlands has been raising over and over again. You're suggesting that I don't talk to people who earn less than me or that people who earn a lot more than me discredit who I am? That's what you're saying, and you're revealing your social premises.
I was actually, you don't want to know about me. No, you really don't. But the point about it is that you expect solidarity and cooperation.
But you're assuming that it's based on a person's income. That's your assumption, that solidarity and cooperation is based on a financial exchange. There are other forms of
absolutely
human interaction.
All right. I agree with you. But when you have people the same, in some sense, status